Good riddance. March is a good month. Every other day feels like sports. Christmas morning from March Madness Selection Sunday to the tournament's always anticipated first weekend to MLB opening day to the 2020 International Cricket Tour. There is something for everyone. The weather is warmer. The sun is shining high in the sky. The vibes are flying even higher. And we've got it all for you right here at Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM. You know the drill. We just got to roll the music and then we'll talk some ball.
This is KTRU on 96.1, KTRU, LP, Houston, and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Stay in the loop. Go ahead and follow us at KTRU Sports on Instagram and at KTRU Sports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for us, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktrusports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Throughout the next hour, you'll be hearing from a team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges, here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. Not as much going on in the world of Rice athletics this week, as a lot of our winter sports have wrapped up, but we do have a few things to get to. The women's tennis team has continued their tear. They beat number 73 conference rival Memphis Tigers last Friday 4-3. They dropped the doubles portion of the match, but were carried by strong singles play as Divna Ratkovic beat Sofia Micah Hylitz, I'm not sure if I pronounced that name correctly, 6-3, 6-1, and Nathessa Selvaraj beat Alyssa Richter, 6-3, 6-1. They then lost their 8-game win streak, which the Memphis match capped off when they dropped to number 38 Furman, shout out the Paladins, by a score of 4-2. Rice is now ranked 43rd in the country for women's tennis. They are back in action, not the weekend you're listening to this, but next weekend, April 4th and 5th, I believe. They are headed to the state of Florida. They are taking on USF, the Bulls, on Friday at noon. Then on Saturday at noon, they will take on the 46th nationally ranked Panthers of Florida International. Good stuff, as always, from Owl Women's Tennis. We've recently been covering the golf team as spring golf season gets into full swing. They recently hosted the All-American Collegiate here in the Houston area at the Golf Club of Houston in Humble. No team shot under par due to wins. Rice head coach Justin Amiel said, with the wins today, it was a battle out there, but we showed some toughness down the stretch. Raghav Chug and Daniel Zhu tied for 12th in the individual competition. Each shot an even par, 216, 72, 72, 72 after three rounds. Reggie Zhu was not far behind at just three over on his three rounds. Owl Golf is not back in action in the next coming weeks, but we will keep you posted as they continue to play. The Rockets, we haven't mentioned them in a while because we've been so caught up in college basketball, but they have been on an absolute tear. They have won 12 of their last 13, including two wins over the Magic, with their only loss since, I believe, March 4th, coming to the Nuggets. They are now 48-26 on the season, which is good for second in the West behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are in a great spot in terms of seeding heading into the playoffs. We will see if they can keep it up come crunch time. Perhaps the most newsworthy Rice sport over the last couple weeks has been baseball. They've been in and out of headlines for all sorts of reasons, not always positive. They started recently under new head coach David Pierce last weekend after a rough start to the season under Jose Cruz Jr. His first game was the Friday game against the Florida Atlantic Owls on the road. They took 1-3 in that series, dropped 9-3 on Friday, 1-3-1 on Saturday, and then lost 6-4. On Sunday, so avoided the sweep there. Not a terrible start from Coach Pierce. They then lost on Tuesday to Lamar 1-2 and beat Texas Southern at home 12-3 on Wednesday evening. They are now 6-20 on the season, but 2-3 under new coach David Pierce. They were 4-17 before he began his position as head coach of the team. Their next set is this weekend. They are home against the Pirates of East Carolina, by far the biggest baseball powerhouse in the American Athletic Conference. And we are going to break down a lot more for you about this coaching change and what this could mean for the Owl baseball program. Have we turned a new horizon? What happened in the Jose Cruz Jr. era? Can David Pierce fix it? These are all the questions that we are going to try to answer right now.
Yeah, might as well get started. Well, Ian, I think the first thing to talk about is just what went wrong with the Jose Cruz Jr. era. Because when we made this hiring in 2022, right, you'd think this is like perfect for Rice. We have a former player here, someone who is awesome for us, had a lengthy MLB career, so a personal tie to the university and success as a player. That typically bodes well for coaches. And in Jose Cruz's tenure, he was 63 and 126 overall for a massive 33% win percentage. To you, what went wrong, Ian?
I think, okay, before we get into that, I also want to like add on to what you were saying, that like it seemed like such a good hire.
Yeah.
Like when you look back on it, it's really hard to fault, I think, Rice for this. Because he was a hitting coach for the Tigers, I think, too. And he had worked his way up the professional coaching ranks. He had played professionally, was a standout. He was a standout at Rice as a three-time All-American. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd just been an absolute stud as a player and had a pretty decent coaching resume,
yeah,
like, from an assistant's perspective, in, like, the pros coming into the Rice job. And then everything just went south, despite having, like, I mean, while he was here, they got, like, an all-new, you know, like, field and stuff. Like, they've got...
Yeah, I mean, Reckling Park is great.
Like, Reckling Park is, especially for the psych level of program we're at, like in the American Athletic Conference, I think we have pretty good baseball facilities. And just
I would argue baseball is the program we've invested the most money into, and it's not even close, just because of all the like big donors we have back in our like glory days. Anthony Rendon, big shout out.
And I think it's just kind of sad to be like, okay, if you have all these resources and all this coaching history, and then you come here, and I think the question of what went wrong, I mean, obviously a lot of things went wrong. I think one issue that Rice ran into over and over again was retaining players.
Yeah.
And this might be a symptom of other problems that are hard to see from the outside looking in. But it feels like every year our roster is like 80% freshmen. Mm-hmm. I know that's not like literally true, but it feels that way. And I'm sure we could quantify that and say, okay, look, we had, you know, like I know this year, like our like lineup that we're sending out every day is like mostly freshmen or like sophomores who didn't play last year. It's like, because it's a lot of local Houston like high schoolers. We don't have a lot of guys transferring in. We have a lot of guys transferring out and then sitting on the bench at other programs. We don't have a lot of guys transferring in. So we have a lot of young players going up against, you know, our conference rivals, which I think just generally a lot more experienced and kind of in better.
Okay, well, do you think that like issue then is just a symptom of like where the transfer portal is at overall today, where like Power Five schools obviously are going to take a lot of the talent from schools like Rice, high majors, or is that more of a Jose Cruz Jr. problem where he just couldn't really relate to college players maybe as much as he could in the MLB?
You know, I don't want to do this, but I am inclined a little bit to put that on Cruz, honestly.
Okay.
Because I think if you have a program that, like, in the modern era, you can't win just with top high school talent, I think, year after year. I think we've kind of seen that in baseball specifically with Cruz and with Rice and with a bunch of other teams as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, there's a point where if all our conference rivals that we're playing, like, you know, like obviously we start off the year because of our, you know, storied from the early 2000s, you know, playing a bunch of Power Five programs and like, sure, we're going to roll out against Tennessee and get trounced no matter what we do. Like, that's kind of a given, I get to an extent. But like, we need to be able to compete in the conference.
Oh, for sure.
Like, we're like almost dead last in the conference every year. And we're one of the best funded and most storied programs in the conference, probably up there with like East Carolina, honestly.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there are other programs of similar caliber to us that are still having a lot of success in the modern era.
Yeah.
And there are, I think if Rice had like a little bit more success under our belt and, dare I say, a coaching staff that was managing this a little better, I think we'd be able to get people to transfer in, because we have funding and we have facilities and we're like a well-known program in the college baseball sphere. It's like, we should be able to attract the talent we need to compete, and then we should be able to compete with that talent. And at least one, if not both of those things, has just kind of been missing the mark a little bit.
Yeah, so it seems like there's just a disconnect there of Jose Cruz not being able to bring in talent, which then brings us to, we get David Pierce, who it seems like, based on his coaching record, has been a phenomenal recruiter and someone who brings talent with him literally everywhere he goes. Before I let you do a little more of the baseball side analysis, Ian, I'll give y'all a quick rundown of his resume. So Pierce was an assistant here at Rice from 2003 to 2011. That was during our run to the College World Series when we won it all in 2003, his first year. After being at Rice for 8 years, he jumped to Sam Houston to take over as head coach. In his first year there, they go on a 40-win season. They make the NCAA tournament, and they beat Rice when we were a number one seed in the regional and knocked us out, which is a little funny. A bit of a get back there for Pierce. But he stays at Sam Houston for 3 years. They win the regular season conference title literally every single year, make the tournament every year. He goes to a better job at Tulane. He's there for 2 years. Year one, he takes them to the tournament for the first time since 2008. Year two, they win the conference championship for the first time since like 2006. So he completely turns around that program. What does he do then? He gets hired by the University of Texas, probably one of the like top five blue bloods when it comes to college baseball.
Oh, they're up there for sure.
Yeah, one of the most storied programs, them, USC. And in 8 years of coaching, he has 3 College World Series appearances, 3 conference regular season championships, and he gets released by Texas after going a horrible 36-24, third place in the Big 12, and an NCAA tournament berth. How dare you, David Pierce, do so poorly? I mean, he wins literally everywhere he goes, it seems like. Like, this guy can't get away from success, and we managed to bring him back here to Rice, where he was an assistant those years ago, and he helped lead us to a College World Series. Is this just a home run of a hire, you could say?
He feels a little overqualified, honestly.
I know, right?
Okay, the first thing that's like I thought of just now, which like hear me out, is like this has a little bit of like minus the like questionable issues, like a little bit of a Will Wade vibe. Like I've heard before that like Will Wade is the most overqualified coach in like ever and anywhere in sports, because you know, after all the stuff he did at LSU and where else and all the tournament success, and now he's just tearing it up at McNeese.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all know like the last 2 years he's had them in the tournament making noise, obviously this year.
Shout out Amir Khan.
Shout out, yeah. And this kind of has the same vibe of like crazy levels of power conference success in the tournament, you know, making even more so, making College World Series, like almost can't ask for anything better. Like, and I like it's,
yeah,
like, I don't even know what to say.
I mean, to me, this is the best coaching hire Rice has made in years. Like, I was super high on the Rob Lanier hire, and I think that was awesome getting someone who had been at SMU, which was a Power Four at the time and had head coaching experience. That's a great hire. But this is someone who has literally been at like the highest level of the sport,
right?
Like, was a national coach of the year in 2018, has been to the College World Series. This is someone you would see who he gets fired from UT and then he goes to a school like Tennessee or something and just jump ship to another SEC
school.
That's
what you would think. Yeah, because it's not like he was like struggling either.
No,
like, I also, if we continue the basketball parallels, just because I know more about those coaches off the top of my head, if you think about when Chris Beard got fired from Texas for that insane scandal, but like then he just,
Let's not say scandal. He did assault his wife.
Okay, yeah.
That was on him 100%.
I was trying to avoid bringing that up, but he jumped ship to Ole Miss and like now Ole Miss is successful. So like that's an example of like got fired from Texas for very valid and obviously completely different reasons,
yeah,
as Garrett just
so
alluded to. But the point that I was trying to make with that, which maybe I shouldn't have brought this up, is that he was able to, like, more or less, like, just jump ship to a slightly lower level school at the power conference level,
yeah,
and just continue, like, from a basketball perspective, crushing it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think you would expect Pierce to have been able to do.
But, okay, so for Pierce, then, I think what gives me even more hope, because you could make the argument of, like, what you said with Will Wade, he jumps from LSU to McNeese just because that's convenient for him. Obviously, another Louisiana school.
Yeah.
He has kids. Keep them in the same area. For Pierce, it seems like it's more than that. Even though he was in the Houston area before this with Texas Southern or Texas State, I think Texas State as an assistant, like, he has personal ties to Rice, where I think this is a school he could see himself being at long-term rather than just being a minor stepping stone until he can find another bigger job.
And that's I think you're right. I hadn't thought about that, but I think you're 100% right about that versus the other random basketball analogies we had been drawing. That,
also, like, I believe he's 62, so not someone that's really looking to
have
a jump to another thing that he's going to be able to do for a long time. I think he's kind of on the tail end
well,
of
he's also like,
his career in that sense.
He almost can't go anywhere. Like, he's had it. He coached like a top program in the sport. He went to the CWS multiple times. He won Power Conference. Like, he's done the things. He's made the rounds. He's lived the college baseball coaching career, like, short of like a national title that he probably like dreamed of, honestly. And
could it be coming back to Rice?
Could it be coming back to Rice? That is the big question. Are we going to see the Rice Owls in Omaha come May?
If you see the Rice Owls in Omaha, you will be seeing me in Omaha too. all those shot challenges at the Omaha bars, me and Ian will be single-handedly winning those for the Owls. but yeah, overall, complete aside right there. But overall, this is just an amazing hire for Rice, something I think that should give fans a lot of hope, a lot of excitement. Like, hopefully, like we've been talking about, he will be here to stay long-term. And this is a school where he just wants to settle down at and see what he can do for the rest of his career. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think, like, real quick, we should, like, talk a little bit about, like, expectations now that we've hyped this up so much.
Because
I don't think, you know, as much as I would love to, I kind of doubt we're going to see the Owls playing baseball on ESPN in June. But,
no,
you know, because, like, one, he's inherited this roster that we already trashed arguably more than it was worth earlier in the segment. And so I think we got to give him, I think, like, what'll be really telling is if, with the talent we have, we can compete even at, like, a, like, mid-level in the conference as opposed to what we had been doing with Cruz, where we were just getting blown out by awful teams, even in the non-conference play. Like, our weeknight matchups against much smaller Texas programs, we were just getting, like, steamrolled. I think we lost to UH, like, 18-1 or something like that. Like, we were just getting ran through. And there are multiple times where there was, like, blatant, like, managerial blunders in terms of, like, oh, we have pitchers taking ABs because we messed up subbing the DH and, like, stuff like that, too, which, like, if we're going to compete with, like, Power 5 schools, we just can't be doing that.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're just putting ourselves at disadvantage for no reason. So I wonder if the immediate change in just how we're kind of managing the players we have already before we even get to a chance of shaping the roster, we'll see some improvement and, you know, make Rice baseball in conference play, you know, watchable and give us a little hope for their contention come conference tournament. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, no, I'm in complete agreement. I mean, I think this is kind of like a wash of a season. I really respect the fact that Pierce took over midseason.
Oh, 100%.
When reportedly he was given the option of taking over after the season. So he could have let Rice baseball just flounder and say, hey, I'm going to come in, I'll reshape the roster. Instead, he was like, no, I want to get in as soon as possible. I don't care who we got. We're going to lay the foundation of the culture that I want to set. Like, that's something I really respect, considering he had no obligation to do that whatsoever. We were just glad to have him.
I think that also ties into what we were talking about with his, like, I mean, like, where his career has been and maybe wanting to settle and kind of stay in the Houston area, where it's like, he's like, if he was wanted a bigger job, he would obviously have to wait till the end of the off season, or wait till the end of the season and the end of the summer, and, like, you know, shop around, see what's available, see who got fired, see who retired, stuff like that, and then, you know, interview a bunch of places and get all those off, go through the whole carousel.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was just like, if he knows he wants this job and he knows this is how he wants to finish out his career, like we were talking about, and they offered it to him now, I mean, like, why would he sit around and wait? I think it all ties back together and makes more sense when you look at it from all those perspectives. So hopefully some stability at least coming for a Rice baseball program that I think is in dire need of at least some consistent ability to win winnable games.
Well, all right, having talked about that Rice baseball team, why don't we talk about the second biggest baseball team in Houston? That's your Houston Astros. Let's get into a little bit of a recap of MLB's opening day, which just finished up yesterday at the time of recording this. Jacob, I want to get started. Let's just go right into it. Let's hit on a couple of the big teams. I want to hear about the Dodgers. They're the biggest story of the offseason. Obviously the clear favorite coming into this year. What do you think the road to the World Series looks like for them? And then we can talk about the little brothers, the Astros, and their outlook.
All right, buddy.
That.
No bias, by the way, Jacob.
Okay. Just looking at the Dodgers offseason, everyone is at their mercy. There is, like, no way you can just look at this team and say, like, if they don't, like, if they try all 162 games of the season, they can beat the regular season record. They got to 100.
Wow.
They got to 111 wins in the 2022 season. And this team is a whole lot better on paper. I'm very excited to see what they can do. Like, it's just like, just look at their offseason. Okay, we got Blake Snell. We got Roki Sasaki, who's predicted to be the rookie of the year, right? On a very cheap deal, mind you, too. We re-signed Teoscar Hernandez, who saved us yesterday. Blake Treinen. We got Kike Hernandez, great clubhouse player. Kirby Yates, Tanner Scott. And those are just like, three, like, our bullpen is, like, just so fortified. This is, like, the best bullpen Dave Roberts has ever had to coach. And I think it's just, like, there's, like, no way, like, they're going to, like, lose a division because they had just so much depth. Like, I've seen articles where you can split their team in half and there's still a chance, like, where they both teams wouldn't be able to make the playoffs. Just, like, that's just how much depth.
That's insane.
God. That's just how much depth the Dodgers have. Obviously, like, their pitching rotation has to stay healthy. But I think we have so much depth now. Like, unfortunately, like, some of the rookies, like Bobby Miller, River Ryan, Gavin Stone are all out. But as long as we can keep like Yamamoto, Sasaki, what's it called? Of course, Blake Snell and Glasnow healthy throughout the year. If at least like three of them stay healthy throughout the year, we have like easily the best starting rotation in baseball.
So to you, this is a Dodgers World Series year, almost a foregone conclusion.
it's like a World Series or bust, as Julian said. Like the Hansen was supposed to win, like the soccer.
Okay.
It's
No, we do not talk about that. We do not talk about that.
Okay, but it's same scenario, but it
would be making history too, no? Because it's been a while since we've had repeat champions. That was what?
Correct.
Yankees back in
99, 2000.
Yeah, there we go.
Good show.
So, I mean, hey, Dodgers could be the modern dynasty. Do you think? I mean, when you've got Shohei,
yes,
you know, like it's pretty, you know, it's bound to be inevitable. Basically.
Yeah, like our lineup is just so stacked. Like there's like Mookie Betts to lead off, and then you have like Ohtani. And then you have Freeman, and then you have Will Smith.
All right,
like,
I'm tired of the Glaze, man. Let's move on.
I just
more Dodgers.
Jacob
talk,
is
bro.
A Dodgers
I've
fan,
heard
by
enough.
The way, from Los Angeles. So, you know, in case it was sounding like Glaze, that's because it totally was. Especially because, you know, nothing is guaranteed when you have to play the Houston Astros, who we should talk about next. The local team, two-time World Series champions in the 2000s, you know. The last dynasty, now handing the baton to the Dodgers. But, hey, it may not even be over.
Julian, you could make the argument it really doesn't matter how good the Dodgers pitching rotation is when the Astros know what pitch is coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that level of baseball IQ just, you know, is unmatched in any
Thanks, Chloe.
In any other team. I don't know what the joke is here. The Astros are like one of the smartest teams in the MLB. So yeah,
all right, let's let the ball knower talk. Yeah. Jacob, what do the Astros need this year to make another run?
Okay, to make a run, you have to beat the Rangers. Like that's just the number one priority.
I do not like the
Rangers
sound of that.
Are the team to beat, definitely. Obviously, they made. Sorry, they won the World Series 2 seasons ago. So and last year. Like, they definitely, like, even though it was a down year, like, I still see a lot of potential. Like, I feel like Jacob deGrom is not the 100th best player in the MLB. He certainly deserves a whole lot better than that.
What was that, like, the ESPN, like,
yes,
top list?
Yeah. That's so, it was, I mean, just, like, look at Mike Trout. They put him at 37. Like, that's kind of, like, also a tangent.
What?
But,
crazy. Well, I mean, so, last year for the Rangers really was just the most disastrous season possible, looking at it from an injury perspective. Like, almost every rotation pitcher was out at some point. You were missing a lot of position players, too. Like, I don't know really how much they could have done to, you know, repeat or look to make another run after that great 2023 year. Let's move on, then. Outside of, we talked about Dodgers, Astros, Rangers. Who do you is next
Didn't
up?
Didn't really talk Astros. But
yeah,
come on,
I mean,
Garrett.
Okay,
I don't really want to hear about that.
I mean, obviously, like, the Rangers have a better starting rotation, and that's what the Astros lack. But it's like, and obviously, like, the Astros, just, like, their heart was, like, torn. Like, their fans have their hearts torn to pieces, like, losing Bregman, Tucker, and Verlander.
Yeah, no, realistically. So it's realistically Astros fans know, and, you know, if you check anywhere, even the Instagram comment section of the Astros post, like, Astros fans are, you know, we're as if, you know, I was a huge Astros fan. I'm just from Houston. I'm just a local. But all, you know, Astros fans have sort of accepted that the best days are probably behind this team, especially now that we're looking at only Altuve remaining from that first World Series team. Obviously, you still have Peña from that second one, but not really the same when you do lose Bregman, when you trade away Kyle Tucker. Obviously, Correa and Springer left a while ago, but the core of that team has definitely been dismantled, and it really is sort of like a retool, if not a rebuild. You know, it may be a while before the Astros really can make a run. I think the can they win the World Series question may not really apply to them anymore. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I definitely don't see them winning it this year. But like, there's obviously like the AL West is like relatively still pretty weak. Like, I wouldn't say like I don't think like if you're like 10 games above 500, like there's a good chance you guys can still win the division, or at least like I don't know about wild card. I see the AL West as only like the division leader making it in. But I mean, obviously it depends how many series you win against the Rangers and the Mariners.
Yeah,
and I mean, even like if the Athletics manage to take a couple series away from you, then that can like obviously hurt your
Yeah, chances. I know we played the Rangers pretty well last season. Obviously, they had the injuries, but that may give Astros fans hope. But yeah, it should be a pretty competitive AL West, at least that fight for the division title between the two Texas teams then.
All right, let's keep it in the American League. We haven't talked about the elephant in the room. How about those New York Yankees? What is the outlook for them this year, Jacob?
Okay, so I honestly, looking back at that fifth inning, I feel like the fifth inning is their only motivation to like do better this year. Like I
wow,
I feel like Aaron Judge, an angry campaign, like just like pure rampage, is like the thing that can save them. Because just look at how many people they've lost. Like obviously you lost Soto, you lost obviously Gerrit Cole. Luis Gil is out for a couple months, I believe at least. Stanton's not starting the season. What's it called? You lost Clay Holmes. You lost Gleyber Torres. So obviously there's like some pieces.
This team sounds like they're cooked.
I mean, yeah. Like obviously you still brought in like Bellinger, like who's a clear gold glove caliber, like at least on the defensive side. On the offensive side, it's like he's been improving since like
Aaron Judge carry job incoming, I guess.
It definitely.
And there's nothing scary. Like Aaron Judge, that man is like so scary. I don't know how to describe that, but that guy steps up to the bat and you just know that ball is just going to fly all the way across the world, man. It's wild.
Great analysis there, Julian. all right, let's move on. What about the Braves this year? It seems like so as far as Vegas odds go, they have the second best odds after the Dodgers to take the series. Do you think that's something that could happen this year? Are they going to give the Dodgers a run for their money?
Okay, so the case for the Braves is that they had such a bad season last year, and they like still like they're so like injury rated that they still like and they still somehow like put up like a good season, and so they're like the argument is like back with Acuña and Spencer Strider, they're going to be like a lot more retooled, but like still like the Philly starting rotation is still a whole lot better than like it's like a clear step like when healthy above the Braves. And so like they still have to like they have to win their division first. Like if you want to talk about maybe like competing against the Dodgers, like it's definitely not going to be easy for them. Again, like it's I can see them definitely making a run. Like I would if I'm the Dodgers and I had to go against the Braves in the first round, would I be shivering in my timbers? I mean, maybe.
Well but, put.
But like I feel like anything can happen in October. So yeah. I mean, that's always the argument in baseball, anything can happen. And so, like, obviously, if the Braves are hot, the Dodgers aren't, I can definitely see the Braves maybe pulling out something.
And the Braves have just so much playoff experience. I mean, they've been...
Exactly. Yeah.
We talk about the Astros as, like, the recent dynasty. Even though it hasn't resulted in a number of World Series, like, the Braves are playing October baseball pretty much every single year.
Yeah, and they do have that one to show for it at the end of the day. So they can say, like, they've gone and won it. So yeah.
All right, let's real quick wrap up the baseball segment. But first... Jacob, give us division by division who you think's winning every single one.
All right, so if we're going to start with the NL West, obviously got to give it to the Dodgers. I still think there's going to be at least one wild card team, maybe two if you include the Padres in there. But the Diamondbacks might be able to compete for the division. I'd say like there's a chance you can't. Like,
our very own Ian liked that one.
Oh, yeah.
and then so now moving to the AL West, I have definitely... in a close one, I have the Rangers winning.
Ooh, I like that pick.
moving to the NL Central, I feel like this one's similar to the AL West, where it's kind of like a toss-up. I feel like the Cubs have more depth, but I can still see like maybe like I know the Brewers are weaker this year, especially losing Willie Adames, but I think that they can still like hang in there. So can the Reds. And then the AL Central, that's also like I think the Guardians can pull it off. But besides that, like maybe if the Twins can stay healthy, then they obviously can still beat the Guardians. Now to the AL East is just like the strongest division, I think, holistically this year. Like all teams can realistically go above 500. There I can have, I think, just looking how dominantly the Orioles beat the Blue Jays yesterday, I think the Orioles can win the division. And then from there, it's just like, Red Sox, Yankees, Blue Jays, take your pick at whoever gets second. Maybe not the Blue Jays as much, but like it always depends. Like obviously, like Blue Jays have some reason with Vladimir to like still win it. And then finally, like we have the NL East. I mean, yeah, I think I'd give it to the Phillies still. Braves can get in there, but besides that, I think I don't see like any other team really competing strongly. I mean, you have it's like the one with the Nationals and all that, but like I don't play with the Nationals. I think they can get in there, you know. Don't sleep on them. Don't sleep
forced
on them.
Comment.
Sleep on the Athletics or the Nationals this year. I can see them. Okay. I can see them making maybe a wild card if they.
We got 161 games of good baseball to go, it sounds like. A lot of good storylines this year.
Good baseball.
I feel bad for not including the Mets even like in the contention for the NL East. But like
Astros won yesterday. We don't need to talk about the Mets.
Juan Soto still has 1,200 days to prove his contract, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
All right. Or like 1,200 games, sorry, not days.
That's unreal. God, 15 years. All right, Chloe, dude, take over.
Thanks, Garrett. We'll take a break and do a quick PAA and promotion before jumping back in and talking a little March Madness. So I know everyone here has great dental hygiene, but many Americans have missed regular dental care in the past few years. It's important to see a dentist twice a year to identify any problems early. Taking care of your oral health helps overall health. Brushing at least twice a day with fluoride toothpaste and flossing daily can help prevent oral health problems. For more information, visit hrsa.gov/oral-health. Our promotion today. For over 40 years and counting, join us every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. for K-True's oldest running show, Chicken Skin. From songs that set your hair on end to combinations of country, blues, bluegrass, Texas swing, Cajun music, and folk of all varieties. Chicken Skin has all the best music that gives you goosebumps every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And on that note, let's talk some March Madness.
Let's talk.
It's still that time of year. We are all having a great time watching the greatest tournament in sports. There are a whole bunch of things to get to. At the time we are recording this, it is Friday, March 28th. You are listening to this on the air on Saturday, the 29th. By the time this airs, the Elite Eight will be set. Right now, we are kind of in limbo as the Sweet 16 games are played. So we will preview what Elite Eight matchups we know at the time of recording this when the time comes. And we are going to talk about everything you need about March Madness. But I believe we are going to run through our bracket standings real quick for our staff bracket pool, if I'm not mistaken.
That is absolutely right, Ian. For those who don't know, the Against the Grain team did a little bracket challenge of our own. Everyone picking their own bracket and competing to see who's the ultimate college basketball knower. And of course, in first place of those standings is none other than Ian Kleffinger. Wow. 88th percentile of brackets. Your champion is still in Florida. You are looking good. How'd you do it, Ian?
I don't know. I feel like I either win. Okay, I feel like I alternate between like winning every pool I'm in and like getting last in every pool I'm in. Like the Baylor Gonzaga year I won in 2023, I think I won my family pool. But then like last year I was awful. I think the year between those two I was awful. So like if we run this back next year, you guys are looking good.
Fair enough. On that note, I'll take it to myself. Currently in last place of our 7-person pool is none other than me. But
Garrett,
I think there is.
How'd you do it?
Yeah. All right. Listen, I like to pick brackets not entirely based on who I think is actually going to win. I pick based on vibe so much. I pick a lot of upsets, and this year was like a horrible year for upsets.
That is true. So walk us through some of your upset picks real quick for the people. The people want to know.
I was so convinced. Everyone was talking about UC San Diego. I thought Michigan was a little fraudulent. I took them, obviously. Texas A&M, I picked them to lose to Yale just because I do not like the Aggies. Hook 'em, hoot 'em. I picked Colorado State in my Sweet 16. They did not make it. I picked Marquette in my Elite Eight. Just not a lot of low seeds making runs this year. It was a little lame. However, y'all are still going to lose to me, because if Duke ends up winning it all, I'm going to win the bracket challenge, and I'm the only person who picked Duke. So despite my horrible start, I still have a great chance to beat all of y'all.
Let it be known that even though I did not submit my bracket into our group's bracket, I have a 92% accuracy on my bracket, with Duke also winning. So, Garrett, I would
It doesn't count if you're not in the group.
Why are you not in the bracket group?
I forgot to add myself to the group.
I think you can still add. We'll figure that out.
No. He cannot still add that.
Yes, that I can. That is so not 92%. Get with the program, buddy. You are in last, actual last place, okay?
All right.
That's enough. That's
run us through the rest of the standings real quick for the people at home.
So we got Ian in first, Big David in second, Andrew Fox in third, poor Brandon is currently in fourth out of seventh. He will be finishing last, almost guaranteed. He picked the Johnnies to go all the way. Uh-oh, they lost in the second round. Max Basurto in fifth, and then producer Chloe in sixth. Right, just narrowly ahead of me, by the way. I'm nipping at your heels.
It's been a rough March, but like you, I have Houston. Nobody has Houston. Yes. So if Houston can pull this out, I'm in good shape as well.
No, you're looking good. It's really the Florida people that need to worry, because y'all are all bunched up, so it'll just come down to...
I didn't expect so many people to pick Florida, and then like 20-something percent of the country on ESPN picked Florida.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that?
Yeah.
That seemed like most logical to me. Like, I figured Duke and Florida would be the two most picked. And okay. They were by far.
I thought Auburn would be higher than they were.
Yeah, that's. But they were just so cold in the SEC tournament. I can understand like why teams didn't want to pick
them.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I think your pick of Houston was very smart, Chloe. Like, I was shocked at like how low the percentage was of people who picked Houston as
their
champ.
Big brain right there.
Yeah, like picking Houston to win it is honestly a great method to win your March Madness bracket challenge.
You always want to choose the one seed that people are picking the least. This year, that was Houston. They were only picked in like 9% of brackets, like so low.
Yeah, it's going to be great when Duke wins it, of course. so, yeah. Update, I cannot actually join our group anymore.
Yeah,
but let it be known. I am in first
that's what I thought.
I am in first place. If we do an honorable bracket, really, or honorable rankings.
First place in spirit, yeah.
That's what we care about. 92%. Just remember the number, 92%.
First in our hearts, Julian Puerto.
Cooper Flagg. Speaking of Cooper Flagg, we should move on to the
tournament.
The tournament.
Yes. The actual tournament.
All right. We're going to run through a couple of our favorite moments and just our favorite games and just bask in the glory that is March Madness. Garrett is going to get us started with what some may consider an unconventional pick for favorite game.
Oh, this is not unconventional at all to me. The first four matters too. Okay. Alabama State versus St. Francis was an instant classic.
For the record, I agree with you. I was just...
Okay. You're just
it is a
it
16
up.
Seed playing game.
Hey, just because they were playing for the honor to get smacked by Auburn doesn't mean the game does not matter. The final minute of this was absolutely crazy. I'll give y'all the quick play-by-play. Alabama State was up by three with 40 seconds to go. St. Francis hits a deep three to tie the game 68-68. Alabama State winds down the clock, waiting to get a last-second shot, but a shot with 15 seconds left, not leaving St. Francis too much time. They miss it. They get the offensive board. There's an absolute scuffle for this. St. Francis runs straight into an Alabama State player's knees, fouls him. So 68-68, Alabama State going to the line for a 1-1. He misses the first free throw. St. Francis has the ball, 68-68, with like 10 seconds left. They go down the length of the court, dribble it off their own knee, out of bounds for a turnover. Alabama State is now in possession of the ball, 68-68 still, 3 seconds to go. Inbounding under their own basket, and they throw a full court pass reminiscent of Grant Hill and Christian Laettner, only this one is not a clean catch at all. It's bobbled by about three different players until it lands straight in the hands of an Alabama State guard who easily lays it in for the game-winning basket. This was an awesome final minute of a game, and I saw this and thought, we're about to see the best March Madness in years. And then everything after it disappointed me greatly.
And then we got chalk and very few other close games.
Yeah.
One other close game, though, that I will add that I found super entertaining was the Houston-Gonzaga second-round matchup.
Oh, mm-hmm. Awesome second-half comeback by the Zags.
I picked the Zags in my bracket. I was preying on Houston's downfall, as would have done me better in the past years. Yeah. And... I thought they were donezo. They were down, what, 15? Something like they were down by a lot.
They were down
exactly
by a lot, and they were struggling to score. Houston looked like they were going to run away with it.
And the way this game was just so entertaining, because both teams were playing extremely scrappy physical defense, And then both teams finished, like, once Gonzaga dialed in, both teams were scoring a bunch against that defense too. So it was just like great defensive play combined with great buckets over and over again on both ends of the floor. Like, these are two great defensive teams. The score was 81-76, and it looked like great defense the whole time, even as both teams got near to 80 points. So, like, it was just every play was so entertaining. Like, I don't know if I've seen more effort, visible, like, physicality and effort on the floor in almost any game in the tournament thus far.
Ryan Nemhard was out there dying on the court for Gonzaga. He was giving everything.
But Gonzaga was putting it all on the line. I was really hoping – oh, whoops, I kicked the table there. I was really hoping that they would pull through and because if that I had picked that and that had worked out correctly, that would have been beautiful for the bracket. But it did not. But I had a great time watching the game. One of the best games. I think Houston proved their validity a little bit with that one, too. Just overall great basketball viewing experience for me and my parents' chair at like 10 p.m. on spring break.
I would agree. And then the ending of that was so crushing of Gonzaga has the ball down three with a chance to send it to overtime. And they barely get a shot off.
I think it was Battle
who he was crying after the game because
that was so tragic.
He pretty much got stuffed immediately. And
that was tragic.
It was a tough end, but awesome performance by the Zags. Great win by Houston. That's what we like to see in March. Any other moments y'all want to hit on before we transition?
Jacob has one.
All right. It might be a little unknown, but I did go to Denver to go see some March Madness games.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. And I got a little bit of a taste of the madness, you know? Okay. So here we are. I watched Montana get spanked. I saw it. VCU got pretty much spanked by BYU. And then we saw the Yale. Yeah, obviously got spanked. And then we see UCSD, Michigan, right?
Not a spanking.
Okay. No. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No. We started off the game. I thought it was going to be another spanking. And then, no. Just hear me out here. Tyler McGuy might as well be my guy. Because in the last... down 14 at half, Tyler McGuy somehow brings it back and puts UCSD on top for the first time, 65-63 with 2 minutes and a half left. After that, Trey Donaldson, deep three, makes it 66-65, ices the game. Tyler McGuy has the chance, the white guy of history, could have been the Jack Golkey of this year. He bricks the three to lose the game, and my bracket is cooked because I had them going far. But besides that, it was a really exhilarating game. It was either between that one or the BYU Wisconsin, but BYU just hides behind screens all day, so it's not as entertaining.
The BYU Wisconsin was my number two pick behind Houston Gonzaga.
Another really good game.
Valid take there.
Yeah.
But that's what I had.
Colorado State versus Maryland, I think, also deserves a shout. Chloe.
Oh, yeah.
I was just about to say, we got shouted out. An actual buzzer beater but first buzzer beater of the tournament, and also extinguished the fire on having a mid-major in the Sweet 16. So let's just touch on that really quickly.
Okay, I want to say something about what Ian just said. If you're in the camp of saying that should be a travel, you are the lamest, most boring person ever. I hope I never see you at a party, at any social event of any kind. If you want them to call a travel in that situation with the game on the line when it's really ticky-tacky and it's the game-winning shot, go home, man. Go home.
I feel like
you're saying, like you shouldn't call it.
You're saying you shouldn't call it because of, like, the time, like, how, like, the situation is, right?
Honestly,
but
a little
bit, was a travel.
Yeah.
Like, if you would have called
honestly,
that, like,
I don't even think it was a travel.
I'm not sure it was a travel. Either.
Literally, NBA, like, if it's so split where, like, NBA players are saying that's not a travel and, like, people are weighing in on both sides, like, if it's that close, you just should let them play in that situation.
Yeah.
That's
I can understand that.
Especially, like, at the end of, like, people say all the time, like, let the players decide the game. And if we're actually going to live by that, that means there are going to be close things and the default needs to be not calling them.
100%.
That's the way it actually has to be. And I think we're now seeing that. People have been saying that forever. And now it actually happened in practice and people are upset on Twitter.
Exactly.
And I'm like, no, shut up. You got what you asked for. We got an epic basketball game and moment out of what we've been advocating for. It's like, everyone stop complaining.
And it was a hard shot. That was not an easy shot.
He still had to earn his money.
Yeah,
he did not just like waltz up to the rim.
That was good deed by Colorado State. Like a 15-foot floater off glass.
Like on the baseline?
Like, on the baseline. That is a really difficult shot.
Does that remind anyone of the Travis Eby buzzer beater from 2 years ago where he hit the left hook on the same baseline?
My goat.
Shout out.
Eby. Yeah. Good shout right there, Ian. All right. I think that wraps it up for favorite moments. Why don't we get real quick to a little bit of an Elite Eight preview. So at the time of recording, We're going Friday at 3 o'clock right now. We know it's Duke, Alabama, and Florida, Texas Tech. We don't know what it looks like in the other two regions. But let's start off with Duke favored by 6.5 versus Alabama. How do y'all see this game going? Ian?
6.5 is a lot to give a team that just knocked down as many shots as Alabama did. But at the same time, three-point shooting teams like that, are the variance is just so insane.
It's very high.
They play so fast-paced, and they shoot the ball so god darn much. And I think, like, I thought, like, BYU plays a similar way, and then they ran BYU off the floor.
I mean,
so, like, I'm wondering if, like, now that they've hit Duke, like, have they hit a team that can now actually keep up with the pace at which they play? It's, like, part of what I'm wondering here.
Yeah, that's the most interesting part of this game to me is because, like, the shots Alabama takes are so difficult. I mean, we talk about Duke's, like, unbelievable defense and length, but Alabama, most of their threes I think are coming like 3+ feet behind the line. Like they're coming running off of handoffs. Like these are not easy three-pointers where it's just a guy's driving in and kicking out to an open shooter. Like there's only so much Duke can do to guard against these kind of shots that Alabama was hitting against BYU. So like in a matchup, if Alabama gets hot like this again, even though Duke's defense is awesome, how much can they actually slow this down?
Like I know it's very unlikely that Alabama stays this hot all the way through. Like honestly, for any other game, but if they do, if they can shoot and run the offense they did last night against a BYU team that's like really good team.
Yeah,
I think I had them beating Bama in going to the Elite Eight. So like I've been a BYU believer. Like I believe BYU is a really good team, and then Alabama comes out and does this. Like if they keep this up, they're gonna win the title. Like you can't make that many shots and not win the title.
They just made the most threes in an NCAA tournament game ever and shot 50%. Like objectively, they're not gonna.
There's no way they're gonna do that again.
But it's more so if they can like maintain this pace close to it. Like if they drop 19 or 18 threes against Duke, like the math becomes really difficult.
Right.
Duke matching that score, but at the same time, you think about like Duke. Just looked absolutely unstoppable against Arizona, who's probably a better defense than Alabama. Like that, we were talking about it before the show, Ian. They have four ball handlers on the court at all times, and also an awesome center rotation of Malawak and Ngongba. Like, I don't know how Alabama slows down Duke at the same time.
The other thing is Duke is much more well-rounded than Alabama.
Yeah.
They play much better defense. They can play at a fast pace and a slow pace. Like, mm-hmm. Duke can do everything. Like,
yeah.
Alabama has one thing that they do crazy well, and they can catch a lot of good teams by doing it well. Duke can do literally anything well. There's a reason they're
absolutely.
Ranked as highly as they are and have had the success that they have. Because they can play fast, they can play slow, they can like play in the paint, they can play on the perimeter, they can do like literally anything, and they have shooters everywhere, like you were just talking about.
Yeah.
They have ball handlers everywhere. Like, there's nowhere that isn't, like, a threat to just, like, drop a 20 bomb and, like, ruin your game.
Oh, 100%. And while we're talking about shooters, if Cooper Flagg's three-point shot is hitting, he's going to drop 30 on Alabama 100%.
Oh, yeah.
He is an absolute bully in the post. Like, if you get him the ball anywhere close to, like, the block, he's going to post you up and he's going to score over you because he's bigger and he's stronger, even though he's literally only 18 years old. And at the same time, his three-point shot is going in right now.
I would be surprised if Alabama has a defensive answer for that. I think if they're going to have to just kind of bite the bullet and knock down a bajillion threes again if they're going to keep up with that, honestly.
Yeah, I believe it. Jacob?
Yeah, I had Alabama getting upset in the Sweet 16 to Wisconsin. Obviously, that didn't happen. But I feel like coming into this game, this is like the best scenario Alabama could be in. I feel like coming in with this, like breaking the record, throwing down that many threes, it just brings up the confidence. I feel like they're going to be able to just look at themselves and say, we can actually win this game.
100%.
I think this game's going to be a whole lot closer than initially expected. And just like I'm excited to see this game now, knowing that what Alabama can bring to the table.
Yeah, I think we're in store for a super good game. I see it going one of two ways. I think if Alabama is hitting shots, this is going to be close. Like they're not going to be able to run Duke off the court the way they did with BYU. If Alabama is not hitting shots, Duke is going to embarrass them, I think, because Alabama is not going to stop Duke no matter what.
I think this game has a very real chance to be the most entertaining one to watch of the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I could see us having like a 90-90 shootout.
Yeah, the over-under is 173, I think, right now. So projecting teams to hit over 85 points apiece. So it's going to be up there. I think it's going to be a very exciting game to watch. Let's quickly go over Florida, Texas Tech, and then we'll make some predictions.
Ian, do you have thoughts on this? I'll let you start it off.
Okay. I There's a lot of Texas Tech hate in this room, and I will not stand for it.
Wow.
I will defend the Red Raiders to an extent. I think they earned their three seed. I think I picked this game to happen. This is part of why I picked this Florida-Texas Tech matchup to be in the Elite Eight, and obviously I have Florida winning as my champion. And, like, obviously Florida the one seed, that's not that interesting of a pick. But from a Texas Tech perspective, they played so well in the Big 12. I think people were fading the Big 12 a little bit. And I think the top of the Big 12 has kind of proven themselves a little bit in this tournament. Arizona did well. BYU did well. Houston's obviously doing well. Texas Tech is doing well. And Texas Tech has kept up with all of those teams. And then obviously they had a really dicey game against Arkansas. But you had a dicey game against, you know, a John Calipari coached team in the tournament. I think that's not all that different from what happened to Florida against UConn, because they had a dicey game against a Dan Hurley coach team in the tournament.
Okay, we can't just say the coach is not playing the game. UConn is a back-to-back national champion. Arkansas is a roster that was just assembled basically this year, starting from scratch.
But that roster was like a top 20 roster in the preseason. Like, on paper, that's a great roster.
Maybe so. I'm very much in the camp that Texas Tech is overrated. I think Florida's going to blow them out of the water. Like, we look at paths to get
in
there.
Terms of Florida beating them, but
yeah, okay. Well, no, I guess you're just putting respect on Tech's name.
Yeah, because I think Florida's going to win the game. Mm-hmm. Like, the 6.5, I think, is a fair spread. I think Florida's going to win. I would be surprised. Like, I would not be surprised if they do it very easily.
Yeah.
But I think they earned a three seed and then made the Elite Eight, and then we're all just out here slandering them. Like,
well, I think part of it is their path to the Elite Eight has been the easiest by far. I mean, running up against UNC Wilmington in the first round, a 14 seed, very easy. An 11 seed Drake in the second round. Yeah, Drake was a really cool story, but also that's a super undersized team full of Division II players, which is really good when you're playing other just average Power 5 schools. But when you're playing a team with a lot of size like Tech, it kind of runs out of gas. Mm. And then you play Arkansas in a game you should have lost and narrowly squeak out a win. Like, I've not been massively impressed by this Tech team so far, even though they have put together three straight wins.
I think I was much more impressed by their regular season than I really think they earned their
It's just the Big 12, I agree with you that maybe the top of the Big 12 was underestimated, but there are just so many bad teams in that conference this year. Like, we didn't see the same depth that we're used to of years past in the Big 12, and that's my issue.
Okay. I mean, I think especially, when they're matched up against those top teams, they've played good basketball on the floor time in and time out. Yeah. And I think they could do it. They could do it again. If this comes out being like 4-point Florida win, that wouldn't surprise me all that much.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Like, I'm not trying to say that Texas Tech is some bum who shouldn't have made it this far. Like, winning games in the tournament is never easy, but I think we are overvaluing them to some degree. With that said, let's move on to some predictions and see what we really think. It's time to put our money where our mouth is. Let's get it started. Alabama versus Duke. Give me those Blue Devils by a million. They're planting the flag. Alabama, you don't stand a chance. I'll kick it over to Ian.
I'm also going to take the Blue Devils. We talked about this extensively. The Bama variance is too high for me. Duke is too well-rounded and just too dominant. I have to take the Blue Devils here.
I will also be taking the Blue Devils. They're just such a consistent team that I think is just going to be able to really just run their way through this game.
I took Duke in my bracket, so if that's any indication, then they're probably going to crash out sooner or later. Bama, when they're playing at their best, can compete with absolutely anyone. They are so good in Nate Oates' system, as we are saying. If they are three is good, they can win this game. Give me Bama.
I respect the take.
Cooper Flagg, if you're hearing this, please win. I have you going to the final.
It's really not that complicated. You take the best player in the matchup, and that's Cooper Flagg. Give me Duke.
All right. Texas Tech, Florida, the matchup we were just talking about. The matchup I just said Texas Tech has no chance in. Well, everyone else was picking Florida, and I decided I need to get my get back. I picked Florida to win in my bracket, obviously. My bracket's been doing horrible. Give me the Red Raiders for no reason at all.
crazy, crazy backtracking from Garrett there, but at the same time, I kind of understand it. I am riding with the champion in my bracket. And what, despite my defense of the Red Raiders, I think is probably the better team in the matchup, give me Florida.
Gators are just going to chomp them up.
Florida's the better team. Let's go.
I love Walter Clayton. He's just such a handsome man, you know. He's going to lead the team to victory. Give me the Gators.
All right, that's enough. give me Florida.
All right, and our final prediction of the week, we got the Lakers versus the Rockets taking place Monday the 31st. You know me, I'm a Luka guy. I think the Lakers are the better team, but this is the regular season, and the Rockets are a great regular season team. Give me the Houston Rockets.
I think as of late, I mean, the Rockets have been extremely consistent against good teams and bad teams. I think the Lakers have been a little all over the place in terms of, like, they've had hot streaks and cold spells since they got the Luka LeBron combo going. Obviously, on paper, it's nasty, but I think it's very possible for the Rockets' kind of solid play so far to carry them to a narrow win here.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with all of that. I'm going to take the Rockets with the Lakers just looking so wishy-washy, getting punked by the Bulls just this last game.
shout out Josh Giddey.
Not a little, not too much, but yeah, give me the Rockets.
I like the Rockets a lot. I give Lakers a bit of an edge with home field advantage here. Let's go LA.
Y'all kind of stole. I was going to say a joke. I was going to say Josh Giddey does not, in fact, play for the Rockets. So I was going to say, give me the Lakers. But yeah,
it was still good, bro. It was still good.
Okay, sorry. It got taken away at this point. You know? So I'd include it, though.
Rockets got Jalen Green, Alperen Shampoo, oh my God. Dylan Brooks, the GOAT, Amen Thompson, amen, and Steven Adams, everybody's favorite Kiwi. The Lakers got AR. Jackson Hayes. Luka, dude. Am I forgetting somebody? LeBron James, the GOAT. Give me the Lakers to beat the Rockets. Sorry, hometown Houston.
SGA, PGA, USA, don't matter. Lakers and five for Julian. All right, that's it for us this week. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM. Or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for K-True Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or if you're a lovely person, Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram and at ktrusports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for the staff, please feel free to DM us. No one has yet. Please send us an email. Send us a DM. It will get read on the show. If you are listening to this, hear my cry. We need
it is,
you.
It is very
we need
possible
your feedback.
That if someone sends us something, we will have a whole segment about it.
That is 100% possible on the table. And if you are going to send us anything, that is ktrusports@gmail.com. That is ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the show. Peace out. It's been real. Let's have a great weekend.